Today's program is brought to you by Fire Cider, a health tonic based on the traditional New England cure-all of raw apple cider vinegar and honey. For more information, visit firecider.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. We've got a great show for you with a great guest who's on the line right now. We wanted to start off, though, the segment with a new segment, that is, and talking about a trending topic in food and media. And I've actually seen this trend over the last month or so. Maybe you have, too, if you're on Instagram or any kind of social media these days. But it is more and more rainbow-colored food. It kind of started with about a month ago, there was a viral video about the bagel, the bagel store in Williamsburg. And they had this special rainbow-colored bagel. It went viral. People were lining up at this bagel store to get this really swirly rainbow-colored food coloring, of course, addled bagel. And so much so that the store had to close down for about 10 days. But in the last week or so, I've seen it was a grilled cheese from a Hong Kong shop that was rainbow colored thanks to food coloring, and then also a rainbow colored pizza. And I'm starting to see like recipes going around, like how to make rainbow colored foods at home using, you know, of course, food coloring are the key ingredients to mastering this technique, which is not really so much a technique as it is a way to get, kind of likes and shares around when you Instagram it ultimately. I think, you know, this is a lot of people are looking at this as sort of harmless and silly and maybe just fun to do once in a while. Well, that's all fair. I'm curious what everyone else thinks out there who's sort of into food, especially now that we're seeing more and more farms come out with their spring produce. To me, there's something a little disconcerting about the idea of home cooks making these food coloring addled dishes when there's so many great farms out there who are like making a lot of sacrifices to grow specialty heirloom produce that is pretty eye-catching naturally. And, you know, I hate to think that folks are kind of neglecting that in favor of food coloring. So I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm just being a little too sensitive here. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are. So tweet to me about hashtag rainbow colored foods at Kathy Irway on Twitter. And maybe we'll go from there. Maybe I'm not getting something too. So let's talk more about that one and see where it goes. But to introduce my guest today, this is a really unique book I'm holding right now. It is a book of poetry, the first that I've had on the show, and it's called Receipt. It's by Karen Leona Anderson. She has an MFA from the Iowa Writers' Workshop. This is her second book of poetry, and she's on the line right now. Karen, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Kathy. I'm really interested in the rainbow-colored foods idea.
Right?
I have three little kids, so food coloring is a popular thing here.
I mean,
Yeah.
It is. I mean, there's been, Easter eggs, you know, other sorts of crafts, arts and crafts that kind of falls under, but I don't know, everyday eating?
Yeah, I don't. They kind of bake their own things, and we never eat them. That
it's not for eating, is
it? Lots of red food coloring, right? And then you're like, okay, I think that's going to go in the compost. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, I mean, different purposes. It's interesting. But let's talk about this wonderful book of poetry. Karen, your poems are so succinct, and I wondered if you might want to choose a poem to read for us to kind of get things started off, or we could do that after the break if you don't have one handy. But
No, sure. I'd be happy to. I think that the one that is sort of best the best sort of out loud mm-hmm. is one called rhubarb, which is kind
that.
Of
yeah.
anomalous in the first section of the book because many of the poems are based on recipes from historical mm-hmm. cookbooks. As I kind of crafted that first section of the book, I also wanted to have some poems that were unrecipied, that just were about foods that you kind of cook from memory. Mm-hmm. So this poem is based on my parents moving from the Midwest to the East Coast, from the same tiny Minnesota small town, and feeling kind of homesick in Connecticut, and making rhubarb sauce, which is it's very popular in the Midwest. It's just rhubarb and yeah. sugar. You cook it. You pour it over toast.
Nice.
So that's the kind of background of this one.
Great.
Rhubarb. Unrecipied, unlooked up, and sudden in our yard. Pie plant as supper. The leather leaf stalk with sugar dipped up to taste from the old starred jar as if no parent were there, as if we had no plans, having never planted the plant but found it out back and odd at the cut, thready-tipped with dirt, but it's done at the point, hot source the sauce, which should have been red, but is not on toast. The thick, dry stalk surrendered to heat and the sweet made pulp, and we deep pink.
Thank you so much. That was Rhubarb by Karen Leona Anderson. Thanks so much for reading that aloud.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm very, very happy to do that.
And very good timing, too, because I just saw the first rhubarb of the season at the market yesterday. Very
it's exciting.
So you were mentioning this is one of the few, or at least in the first section of the book, one of the few poems that is not a dedication to a certain cookbook, but this is
yeah.
sort of a standalone dedication to a ingredient, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It's so lovely. You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Have you read Pablo Neruda's Ode to the Artichoke?
I have that printed out right here, actually. Yeah, because I love his odes. And mm-hmm. yeah, it definitely is an ode to rhubarb. And so much of the first section is really about the kind of cultural knowledge around food and the ways that it's mediated by writing and by thinking and by the, you know, the kind of systematic structures around us. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that his poems do both of those things really beautifully, like just thinking about that last stanza of the poem where he says, "This career of the armed vegetable, which is called an artichoke, then scale by scale, we strip off the delicacy and eat the peaceful mush of its green heart." It's such a great, you know, just such a great close.
And it's almost like, well, it makes us think deeply about each really unique ingredient, like rhubarb, artichoke, and so forth. But it's also almost like personifying these ingredients, too. And I'm thinking more and more about rhubarb, and it is a really odd bird when it comes to, I don't even know what it's called, a vegetable? Is it even a vegetable?
Well, it's a stalk, right? Okay. I mean, it's not the leaf, and it's not the fruit.
No.
So my dad's a botanist, so, mm-hmm. you know, like this is important to him. But, yeah, it's an odd thing for us to eat, that piece of the plant. So, yeah,
and
so I wanted to kind of highlight that, too.
It's so inedible, too, when it's not
yeah.
cooked. It's like,
well, you know, we used to eat it raw, but you had to dip it in sugar. And, it did, you know, your parents were always like, don't eat too much of that. You get a stomach ache. But
that's crazy.
It was kind of
I never tried that. I'll have to try that now. Now that I know that that's something you could do. It's just so sour.
It's very sour, yeah, yeah. And I remember going to Thailand and taking a class where we went around a market, and the woman said that when she was a child, she would do that with green mango. And I thought, oh, yeah, these intense flavors that kids love, right? Like, they're really sweet and they're really sour.
It's kind of like you're eating it for that, like, shock value.
Yeah.
Like a sour, not Sour Patch Kid, but you know what I mean? Some of those.
I do. No, it is Sour Patch Kid. I'm pretty sure, yeah, yeah.
And you just, it just comes like that. Wow. So let's talk about some of these poems that are throughout. You dedicate poems such as The Last Minute Date Raptures after Betty Crocker's Picture Cookbook in 1956. They're all kind of older cookbooks that you have here, or Gingerbread After American Cookery from 1796. That's a historical cookbook. Or Asparagus Tips After Mastering the Art of French Cooking. That's Julia Child's 1961 classic. This one is pretty cool. Why did you decide to get inspired by cookbooks for your poetry?
Thanks. Yeah, for asking that question. So I have it in front of me, actually. This was, I had kind of a crisis after my daughter was born. I had always loved cooking. I'd found it so restorative and just this wonderful creative thing. And I just started to hate it. I didn't want to think of what to cook. I didn't want to cook it. I didn't really want to eat it, and I didn't want to clean up after it.
Is it because of the new responsibilities now of having to cook for a family?
She wasn't really eating, you know, she wasn't really eating anything. So it was just about labor, I think, really, just being tired and having to kind of hold things together and in other moments in my life that it's just been less intense. So I just was in this sad place with cooking, and I started to think about my mother, who was an excellent cook and had two kids, and my grandmother was an excellent cook and had five kids, and I thought, okay, I've got to find some way to get back to actually wanting to do this in some way. And so I inherited my grandmother's Betty Crocker picture cookbook from 1956. Mm-hmm. It's got its binding is falling off, and, you know, like all the pages are ripped out and covered in dough. And so I thought, okay, this is going to be the answer. And I started flipping through the book, and I come to this illustration of a little policeman, and he's shaking, like gesturing with a ruler, and there's a little caption next to it that says, measure those pans. And I thought, okay, we're in a totally weird world now. I mean, it did not answer my question at all about how to connect back to cooking in an uncomplicated way, but it definitely had me enter this world of discipline and perfection and kind of, you know, these oppressive routines, along with the spectacle and the pleasures, the kind of gustatory pleasures of Betty Crocker. So, you know, from there, I just started writing poems based on the recipes, like Hollywood Dunk, which is a celebrity recipe, or those last-minute date raptures, which are supposed to be like husband keeper kind of cookies or beau catcher kind of cookies. And then it slowly widened out to include other cookbooks that had been either important in the history of cooking or kind of personally important to me, the Silver Palette or Moosewood or the Complete Cookbook for Men, which is very short, turns out. And just, you know, that it became this idiosyncratic history of the last 75 years of cooking.
It made me realize how gendered earlier cookbooks were, and maybe they still are to a large extent.
They might be, yeah. Sometimes I think I notice that in contemporary cookbooks, too.
And they say a lot more in so much because they are not just only helping you bake a certain dish or something. It's almost like a rule book or handbook for that domestic person at that time, or woman, I should say, or men for the complete men's cookbook.
That one has this preface where he argues that cooking is a male birthright, and it's sort of like take back cooking, you know, from women. And the poem that I have in the book is basically a kind of found poem where he uses method acting to talk about how you would tell when a piece of meat is done. Mm-hmm. So just such an interesting, you know, these discourses around gender and labor and domesticity are just, you know, there. They're just present. So, yeah, I found that fascinating.
I mean, I find it fascinating also that in your poetry, which is not very, let's say it's not very obvious that it is about any cookbook, except for the little head note that you have at the beginning for each, it seems like you are exploring questions around gender roles and femininity in a modern world. Is that a big focus of yours in your poetry overall?
Absolutely. I think that's where a lot of the book came from, in some ways, really looking skeptically at the roles that I was playing in my own life and the things that I had sort of taken as givens about what I would be doing as a parent and as, you know, somebody who's working and but also somebody who really loves to cook and wanted to keep doing that in some way.
It also seems like there's a lot of questioning too throughout. And I was reading just TV Dinner, which you dedicated to the Food Network. I guess it's sort of watching these programs and trying to figure out how that should be manifested in life. And I'm not really sure, because throughout this poem, you say, I don't know, I'm not sure, a couple times,
right,
too. So, it closes with, I'm not talking to you anymore, static and spectral, maybe not.
right. And I think that one of the subtexts or the kind of sub-narrative of the section of the book is a divorce, right? So that didn't biographically happen to me, but I'm sort of thinking about how we might step away from some of these ideas. But it's a difficult thing to do because these ideas about gender are also really bound up in this activity that many women love, right? Mm-hmm. Many women get a lot of pleasure and sustenance from cooking, and so there can't be ever a kind of complete break, I think, from that activity. So yeah, and that poem meditates a little bit on the move from, say, Julia Child to Rachel Ray and mm-hmm. Sandra Lee, right? Which those are quite different kinds of representations of what cooking could mean.
But at the same time, it was speaking to those or for those domestic roles, just in
right.
a different time. It is fascinating what you can draw from both older and modern media in
yeah.
food. It's really fascinating. We're going to cut to a quick little commercial break, and we'll be back, and we're going to give you a little quiz if
okay.
you're ready for it.
Okay. All right.
Today's program was brought to you by Fire Cider. Did your grandmother ever tell you to drink raw apple cider vinegar? It's good advice, and more common than you may think. For generations of New Englanders, a tot of vinegar was a morning ritual. Taken daily, a tablespoon of unfiltered apple cider vinegar can help support immune function and digestive functions. To the base of certified organic apple cider vinegar, Fire Cider added whole, raw, certified organic oranges, lemons, onions, ginger, horseradish, habanero pepper, garlic, and turmeric. They let this mixture steep for 6 weeks at room temperature to preserve the living vinegar culture and delicate flavors of the ingredients. Lastly, they blend a generous helping of raw wildflower honey into the mix. The result is potent but balanced, offering layers of sweet, tart, and spice. Fire Cider tastes great on its own or as an addition to tea, juice, or salad. Fire Cider ships direct from their online store and is available at over 500 locations nationwide. Use their store locator to find one near you and ask for a free sample. For more information, visit firesider.com.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He would be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? I'm not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
All right, we're back on air with Karen Leona Anderson, and she is the author of a new book of poetry called Receipt. Thanks so much for joining us again, Karen.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So we're going to have a fun new little game. I hope it's fun. I really hope so. but I thought it'd be neat to explore some other examples of food and poetry. We talked a little bit about that, but you know, you graduated, you have an MFA from Iowa, which is like the best school for poetry. You must be a sort of an expert on contemporary poetry, right?
I read a lot of poetry. I also did a dissertation at Cornell on poetry and science.
There you go.
So I should be very good at this, but I've got to warn you that I have a reputation in my family as the person who refuses to play Trivial Pursuit because I am so bad at memorizing things.
Okay. Well, we're going to put that
to
the test.
I'm just saying.
It's okay if you don't get this, but I thought it'd be fun to try. So, I have to name, I'm going to read an excerpt from a poem, and I'll give you three choices of the author.
Okay, Kathy, I do, since you warned me that we might be doing this, mm-hmm. I also have a counter offer. Mm-hmm. Once you give me a question, I'm going to ask you a dish, and you can tell me which cookbook it's from.
Okay. I'll do it. Okay.
All right,
so here we go. No smoking signs, raw mustard greens, zucchini by the ton. Uncooked kale and bodies frail are sure to make me run. Was that a poem by Rita Dove, Maya Angelou, or Beth Ann Fennelly?
Maya Angelou.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. All right, so here's your question.
Okay.
That roast, was,
by the way.
Canned, okay, ready. Roast canned chicken flambé with black cherries.
Roast canned chicken? Flambé?
Yes.
Okay.
Flambé with black cherries.
Is it something by Sandra Lee?
No, it's the Can Opener Cookbook from 1951, which is by Poppy Cannon, who was married to Walter White. And that's a very interesting old cookbook. But
Yikes.
Yeah, so Can Opener Cookbook.
Wow. Flambé. Yeah. They were trying there. You could see they were
really trying yep.
to do something with that canned chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for getting me. Yeah, okay. So that was just to mention the name of Maya Angelou's poem is called The Hell Food Diner. Very funny poem about her take on some of these modern food trends, if you will. I mean, people have been writing food, at least in metaphors, in poetry. I don't know, when I was like reading your book and kind of looking around for examples, it's something that comes up a lot. Do you know of anyone else who has sort of dedicated a book to exploring this a little bit more as well?
One of my favorite writers and a huge influence on this book was Harriet Mullen, who wrote a book about moving through a supermarket and sort of meditates on each of the departments. It's mm-hmm. just, it's fantastic. She's an African-American writer who writes experimental poetry, and it's just great and really influential. I know the poet Kevin Young has done an anthology of poems about food that's really important too and really useful in kind of navigating contemporary poetry and food. And Rita Dove actually has food as part of a lot of her work.
Really?
So
I didn't know that.
Right.
I just use that as a wrong answer example.
Right.
That's really fascinating. So was this something that you explored when you were studying poetry? Has this always been sort of a subject of yours, or was it mostly after, as you mentioned, you know, having your daughter that you started thinking more about, you know, the roles of cookbooks and food? Or what's your take on, you know, food in poetry?
Food and poetry. I think for me there are kind of three big categories: the kind of sensual writing about food that can happen sort of at any moment, right? Like the honey for Virgil or something like that. But that crosses sort of all poetry, and
it's sensual details, right?
Yeah, sort of sensual detail, sense-based detail. But I also like when poets kind of drop food into the scene, and my favorite example of this is from the ancient Persian poet Rumi. From this poem that's kind of commonly known as Unmarked Boxes, and he says, God's joy moves from unmarked box to unmarked box, from cell to cell, as rainwater down into flower bed, as roses up from the ground. Now it looks like a plate of rice and fish, now a cliff covered with vines, now a horse being saddled. It hides within these till one day it cracks them open. And so I think of food that way, as this thing that sort of can crack the world open. When I was doing research for this particular book, I went back to the histories of Betty Crocker, right? Like, she's not a real person, but she's someone to whom lots of people wrote as if she was a real person, and people played her on the radio. The corporate website now has a kind of excerpt of the favorite letters that were written to Betty Crocker. And there's one from Mrs. Ernest Hemingway in 1954 from Kenya, where she says, "We're on safari in Africa. How the women who live on remote farms in Kenya find the time and energy to devote to the finer points of baking while dealing with invading lions, leopards, and locust plagues is remarkable. But they complain that the lightness and texture of the cakes they bake need improvement. The flour here is simply ground wheat, not fine or white, as the General Mills softest little cake flour. Could you possibly tell us, if it's not a trade secret, what might be done to improve the quality of the Kenya flour? Your assistance would be extremely welcome for both its intrinsic value and as a gesture of American kindness." Oh. And so I think about your post on food and racism. I think about your podcast on Calvin Trillin's poem. And, you know, here is like the history of colonialism, the history of imperialism, the history of gender relations, a kind of implicit history of race, right, in this letter about food, about flour, right? So I think it cracked the world open for me in really important ways.
And it is interesting to see, I don't really know so much about more male food writing when it comes to poetry. And I'm curious about if there's any, like, really, I don't know if we can make any, like, kind of, like, summarize any differences between the two, like, female writing when it comes, or the approach in poetry. Am I making any sense right here?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. Like I said, Kevin Young has been the champion of, of food poetry in the United States most recently. But I think that would be a really interesting study to undertake to think about it, because certainly there's a really, those roles are still really, really divided. And when I think about the book, the newest Pollen book about cooking, I think, yes. And then I also think, okay, what does this look like on the ground? You know, what does this look like in the actual kitchen? Like, who's doing the labor, and how is that happening? And those are questions that obsess me kind of as a person living in the world, but also as a kind of thinker about how food works.
Right. It does make me wonder, we see that a little bit in fiction too, the different ways food is used or employed by different genders. I hope this isn't too silly, but I thought it would be fun to sort of play Eat Your Words again and take, and I could read a random passage from one of your poems and see if you can identify it.
Of my own poem?
Yes.
Okay, sure.
We'll see if you can identify your own words, let's say.
Okay.
And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about the context of it. Okay. "We hurtle against the corn, hopelessly single, unsingular kernels in the foil."
And that is the poem, Nature. It has had several titles. So Nature.
Oh, yes.
That's the title of it.
You got it.
But the rest of the line is not all that hetero. So so this is thinking a little bit about monoculture, but also heteroculture.
Yes. I love how towards the sort of latter half of the book, there's a lot of topics around nature and sort of like deconstructing some of the recipes that we saw in the beginning of the book, poems. You know, we're taking apart corn and a lot of the natural elements that you see in cooking. So is that what this poem is sort of doing with,
And this is also thinking about the urban-rural divide, right? And the ways that that we move from these different throughout these different spaces. So this is kind of bookended with a poem called First House about about buying a house and what that looks like in relationship to the natural world. So, yeah, I was, because my dad is a biologist, so I'm the combination of a linguist mother and a biologist father, I've always had that kind of consciousness of where are we in terms of place? And that seems to me like a wonderful development in thinking about food, right? Like that if we're thinking about the social elements of food, that we've gotten much more interested and smarter about the ways that it impacts the environment.
Right.
So, so these poems in the end are a little bit about the labor economy, like the broader kind of national labor economy, but also that question of moving through a landscape. And this is, I've use the D.C. Metro because we live about 2 hours south of that, and about the experience of kind of passing through those liminal spaces.
Right, and we're so separated nowadays, even though, yes, you mentioned we're like becoming more aware of our food system, but at the same time we're very separate from it, unless you have, you know, a self-sufficient garden of some sort.
Right.
But yeah, it's so fascinating how many topics you cover. I also want to mention, I really enjoyed the sort of middle section where you have all these little shopping related poems, like Little Black Dress, $49.99 at Nordstrom, after Lori Coleman.
Which is a great deal, really, but yes.
And how is that dedicated to Lori Coleman? Is a great author, by the way. I'm a huge fan of hers. Home Cooking was kind of like her most famous collection, I think, of essays.
Right.
And so how did that how did she influence the Little Black Dress poem?
Oh, okay. So she said that chicken salad is the little black dress.
Oh, that's
of food.
Right.
Or
oh
something,
my God.
You know, something close to that. Those two things were connected. So, so that just sort of got me thinking in that section, a connection between the food stuff and this and shopping, right? Because it was all just different forms of consuming, in one way or another, that I wanted to be pointing to in that moment, and you know what was behind that.
That is so great.
Yeah,
that is really great. Chicken salad is the little black dress, and
right. So you could dress it up, you know, this way or that way. I think was the idea. You could add things to it to make it taste different kinds of ways. But I was thinking about this in that poem. I'm trying to think about the basic, you know, the buying this kind of basic thing that you supposedly can dress up lots of different ways. But of course, it never quite works out that way. So
and it's always something you have to have. Like every you know, every good woman's got to have these staples down pat and so forth.
Right.
Can never have too many little black dresses in your closet. So,
that's
so to
right.
Speak.
So this one, this thing that you're only supposed to have one of, you end up having 10 of, and that's the, you know, sort of part of that logic of consumption.
Wow. Well, Karen, thank you so much for this really, really exciting cookbook. I'm sorry.
Don't cook book from this one, please.
I can't imagine what that would be like. I might try, actually. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for sharing some time to talk about this wonderful book of poetry. It looks like that's about all the time we have for today, but I definitely check out Receipt Poems by Karen Leona Anderson. And do you have a website you want to shout out, Karen?
Sure. It's just www.karenleonaanderson.com. So.
Really looking forward to more from you, too. So we'll keep posted on any future I keep saying cookbooks, but any poetry.
I know.
I really
don't recommend many of the recipes in here. But thank you so much for having me on the show, Kathy. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being the first poet on this show.
Oh, yeah.
And thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization.
To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.